Hello, I'm Chris Weber.
And I'm Robert Mooney.
We're with Cassava Security, one of the consulting members of the Microsoft SDL Pro Network. We offer consulting services and product development services in the security space, and we're pretty committed to the Microsoft SDL process as we've seen it grow and mature over the years and provide value to a lot of our customers and clients. So I wanted to show you just a quick overview of the SDL, or going back to a previous presentation we did where we talked generically about the requirements phase of the SDL. I'm going to just give a quick reminder of what the entire process looks like. Seven steps from training to requirements to design of your product, implementation, verification, release, and finally having a response plan. This slide extends on that model by showing you underneath each phase, what tools are available to help you in your product development and implementing the Microsoft SDL process. These are all free tools that Microsoft makes publicly available. Now, the focus of this presentation is on the requirements phase of the simplified implementation of the Microsoft SDL, specifically as it applies to us building applications in the cloud space and Windows Azure. All right, so here you are. You've decided to move to the cloud and leverage the computing platform of Windows Azure. You know it's going to reduce your total cost of ownership. It's going to leverage your investment in Microsoft technologies, and you're going to leverage Microsoft security expertise in the operational space. So with all that sort of security built into Azure, why do you need still to implement the Microsoft SDL?
Well, Azure may have a lot of security perks to it, but it's not going to cover everything for you. You're still going to have to worry about the application layer in particular. Microsoft does a great job of securing the infrastructure and some of the operational aspects of your deployment to the cloud. But you really, they can't protect you from your code. So you need to apply some common SDL practices to your implementation of your web application before you can be confident that you're going to be secure.
Okay, so the application layer is going to be up to you, and that's what this presentation is about, and how to apply the Microsoft requirements phase during that application development cycle. So how do I implement the requirements phase for my Windows Azure project?
Fortunately, it's pretty simple. Implementing the Microsoft SDL requirements phase in the cloud is quite similar to how you'd apply it to any typical web application. Of course, the more complicated your application, the more caveats that will apply to your deployment. So let's go over a brief introduction to the Windows Azure services. Windows Azure is composed of application services, which includes web roles, worker roles, storage services, which includes blob storage, SQL Azure storage, queuing, and drive storage. You also have Application Fabric. We'll get into the details of application of the SDL to these components later on in the presentation.
So Windows Azure is more than just a back-end storage system, then. It actually enables me to build the front-end applications and the web services that are going to have public APIs. Is that right?
You can take your website and deploy it to Azure with little to no effort.
And my web services?
And your web services. Azure provides back-end storage systems services. It provides federated authentication services for you. It provides a lot of infrastructure for you to get started with not only simple web applications, but enterprise scale cloud computing applications.
All right, so back to what we're talking about in this presentation. You know, the question is, how does Windows Azure help me with applying the Microsoft SDL?
Azure is simple, it's agile, and sustainable. Azure helps accelerate the adoption of the SDL because Azure was actually built using the SDL. So as we said before, Azure removes some of the attack surface by having abstracted the operational and infrastructure security requirements that you would otherwise have to deal with. This allows you to focus on your application layer.
So now on to the requirements phase. Am I right? Like just, you know, a typical SDL implementation of the requirements phase is sort of just like the requirements phase of any software project.
It's the same. I mean, there are a few caveats. You still have to define your security requirements across the product. You still have to define your quality gates and bug bars. And you still have to do a security and privacy risk assessment. For the most part, it's the same.
All right, so at this point, how do my security and privacy requirements change when I'm moving to the cloud?
They don't by much. In fact, moving to Windows Azure, as we've alluded to previously, reduces the attack surface of many of your platform and infrastructure security threats. It's a total cost of ownership savings for you. It allows you to dedicate more time to securing the application layer, again, of your product through the processes outlined in later phases of the Microsoft SDL. So it's important to understand how your SDL requirements map to cloud-based services. That's pretty key. In fact, you may want to add a milestone specifically for this kind of planning. As an example, you might find it worthwhile to replace your current authentication story with services compatible with Azure or known to work with Azure in a more seamless manner.
So on this third point here, authentication and authorization systems compatible with Windows Azure, what are some examples?
So some of the relevant technologies would be Windows Identity Foundation, Active Directory Federation Services, and Windows Azure App Fabric Access Control Service. So in many cases, securing the application layer is really no different from securing it from a typical web service application. Again, we're repeating this throughout the presentation. A lot of the same rules apply when mitigating attack vectors programmatically as they do in any other web application. You know, you still have the same high standards of design and code quality that you want to impress upon your development team. Those segments don't change. Those factors don't change. You still want high quality code and a really strong design.
Yeah, I think at this stage of requirements, you're starting to think about and identify, you know, some of the high-value targets for threat modeling, design review, and additional testing like penetration testing. And this is what we talked about in a different presentation on the requirements phase in general. But now, as we're applying this to an application being built on top of Windows Azure, we're starting to think about real-world attacks like cross-site request forgery, cross-site scripting, clickjacking, open redirects, information disclosure. These are things that are going to affect our applications as we deploy them in the cloud. A good reference for these types of attacks and details about each of them is the OWASP 2010 Top 10 list.
And again, these are standard application layer mitigations.
Yeah, these affect you whether you're in the cloud or whether you're in a hosted provider somewhere or you're in your own blade somewhere in a data center.
So let's talk about what happens when you deploy the cloud. We've already touched upon the requirements that you'd have for any other web application, simple web applications being deployed to Azure. That's one thing. When you build applications that leverage the cloud, you're talking about a whole different beast. Again, simple applications, not really a problem. When you start using compute clusters, when you start doing some federated services behind the scenes, you run into a greater risk of compromise, and you really don't want that. What you do want is, when you're defining your security requirements, to understand the Windows Azure services available to you. This helps you translate your existing domain expertise from the web to the cloud. The simplified implementation of the SDL applies in all areas of software development, and the following guidance takes into account the unique situations Azure presents in the SDL requirements phase.
All right, so I'm looking at the simplified implementation of the Microsoft SDL, a white paper Microsoft put out. And now we're late in the requirements phase. I'm looking at security and privacy risk assessment, SDL practice 4. So what are some specific practices I can be applying here in section 4?
We've got a few of them, starting with auditing and supportability. Application auditing and trace logs are collected from web and worker roles and are stored in blob storage. But this requires additional code to effectuate, meaning you're going to have to write code to tell Azure to collect those logs for you.
So are these logs you're talking about useful in me auditing my own application for leaks, like information leaks, personally identifiable information?
Sure. You're probably, whatever information you're going to be tracing using the system diagnostics namespace, through the trace class, you can have collected by Azure and stored into blob storage or table. It's quite possible that you'll have personally identifiable information in there, and that's something that you're going to want to look out for as you're developing your application. Make sure that you're not doing that. Or if you are and you need to, that you're handling it properly, encrypting it, making sure that it's off-site somehow, just making sure that it's not in the cloud.
Right, and these are all things that we're just, in this phase of requirements, really just thinking about. We're not doing any sort of design now. That's all for later, but we're just thinking through this now so that we have a better position to be in when we get to the design phase.
That's the purpose of the requirements phase.
All right, so as I'm thinking through my application and what components of it need to be threat modeled and have deeper design reviews, there are also some components of Windows Azure that I need to be thinking about. Are these VMs important, these virtual machines? Aren't they publicly accessible?
They are. Most of the components, in fact, all of them are going to be accessible to the outside world. So you want to make sure that you're locking them down appropriately. You can restrict access to your Windows Azure VMs by using the IIS IP restriction module or by using URL rerouting.
So what does it mean that they're publicly accessible? Why is that a threat?
Anyone in the internet can access any of the endpoints you set up in Azure. So if you define a service endpoint in your service definition, any Joe can come and connect to your service. You may not want to do that. You may want to have, this may be a cloud computing application that should only be accessible from within your organization. So you want to make sure that you take the proper steps to define the requirements that lock down your Azure instance.
Oh, so maybe you have an API or an interface that's only meant for some B2B accessibility or a back-end visibility.
Right. You may have a partner channel and you want to only include those partners. You don't want, some malicious person to come over and try and perform transactions in your application environment.
Gotcha. So earlier in the presentation, you mentioned some ways we might want to start thinking about authentication and authorization systems that are real compatible with Windows Azure. Can you talk a little more about that?
Sure. You don't have to use the authorization and authentication mechanisms that are already available in Azure, but you may want to consider it. For instance, Windows Identity Foundation is available to you. Active Directory Federation Services and Windows Azure App Fabric Platform Access. You know, we've discussed these previously, but these are going to be technologies that are tried and true in the Azure environment. So it may make sense for you to implement them.
Okay, so another one of the really important issues during the requirements phase, and to me, is the way we classify our data, you know, and the privacy of it. So my Microsoft Simplified SDL has a privacy impact rating that kind of helps me to decide where my data falls. And you have one of three choices: either your data is high privacy risk, medium privacy risk, or low privacy risk. Now, I know my application's high privacy risk because I'm taking user information in the form of names, email addresses, physical mailing addresses, you know.
Lots of
that's
PII.
Enough. If I'm taking social security numbers and credit cards, I'm definitely high privacy risk. So now that I've classified my data as high privacy risk, what are the problems and threats I need to be aware of as I push it to the cloud, and how do I deal with them?
So you're handling high privacy risk information, and it would be devastating to your business if that kind of information got out. It could kill you. So it's very important that you take that sensitive information and store it securely within the confines of Azure. You need it's a good idea to understand the mechanisms available to you within Azure that will allow you to do this. You know, pretty much you still want to use strong encryption. You want to make sure that your keys aren't getting out.
All right, so we got the privacy stuff figured out. It's basically up to us to make sure our application's handling data in a secure manner. So what about availability situations? Like when we're penetration testing applications, one thing we often do is try denial of service attacks, sometimes flooding attacks on the applications, which kind of resemble what would happen if an application gets slashdotted and just grows overnight to enormous amounts of requests. What's Azure's story there, or is there anything else about application availability we need to know about?
So, as we stated previously, Azure provides a lot of infrastructure mitigations, and you know, they provide some basic denial of service mitigation for you. But at the application layer, you're going to want to make sure that you've got some sort of request throttling, and particularly if your application is uses, you know, traffic analysis to determine how much it should scale. This could end up costing you a ton of money if somebody were to throw an inane amount of requests at you. So you want to really make sure that you're doing some sort of filtering and throttling on the data that you're receiving at that layer.
What's the story with 64-bit code and 32-bit code in the cloud?
So Azure runs on 64-bit. So it's important that you understand whether or not you're developing for 64-bit already, or if you need to perhaps even go back to training and make sure that you're ready to go to 64-bit. one simple mistake in converting from 32 to 64-bit could mean the integrity of your application and your PII if you're storing it. So it's make sure you're writing 64-bit code properly.
So, Rob, you were telling me about this white paper that Microsoft put out on the SDL site called Security Best Practices for Developing Windows Azure Applications. What are the main points or patterns you found in that white paper and how they apply to Azure?
Well, this is a really great document. There's a lot of really great information from a lot of really high-level technical people at Microsoft related to Windows Azure security. Some of the design patterns that you might want to think through that they had abstracted, and this is directly from this paper, is isolating web roles and separation of duties for the individual roles so that you maximize the use of your Windows Azure partial trust. And basically what this means is that in each of your VM instances, you're going to have to decide whether or not you want to use full or partial trust. And in a partial trust environment, you're not as secure as you would be in a full trust environment. But you may need to be partial trust in order to run third-party apps. Like, say you wanted to run PHP. You can do that in Windows Azure, but you have to run in partial trust. So that machine, by the nature of being in a partial trust VM, is not as trusted as some other components that you may be running in a full trust environment. Consider using the gatekeeper design pattern to separate role duties and isolate privileged access. If that doesn't work for you in your environment, because it does have some performance implications, you may want to consider using multiple storage keys to restrict access to the privileged information.
Okay, yeah, and for more information, I can look in the white paper to find out what that's all about and how I'd want to implement that.
So, good paper.
Here's a list of all the resources we've been talking about throughout this presentation about implementing the requirements phase of the simplified Microsoft SDL process in Windows Azure. Here is our contact information. Thanks for watching, and please feel free to email either Rob or myself with any questions or flames you have about this.
Thanks.